stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Ira Melman. Demonstrators have stormed the Iraqi parliament. Hundreds of supporters of Iraqi Shiite cleric Muqtada al-Sadr entered the Iraqi parliament after breaking into Baghdad's government-controlled green zone Saturday. This incident inside Iraq's parliament followed Sadr's denunciation of the government's failure to reform a political quota system blamed for rampant corruption. Inside the chamber, protesters danced, waved Iraqi flags, and chanted pro-Sadr slogans. Supporters of Sadr have been demonstrating in Baghdad for weeks now, responding to their leader's call to put pressure on Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi to follow through on months-old reform promises. A session of parliament failed to reach a quorum earlier Saturday to vote on a cabinet reshuffle proposed by Abadi. Some ministers were approved earlier in the week despite disruptions by dissenting lawmakers. The Iraqi government's Baghdad Operations Command declared a state of emergency inside the capital shortly after demonstrators began entering the green zone. The demonstration took place the same day a suicide bomber driving a car near a group of Shiite Muslim pilgrims outside of Baghdad exploded in an attack that killed at least 17 and wounded nearly 40 more, say police. They say at the scene that the bomb attack targeted the pilgrims walking into Baghdad's holy Qadhimiyya Shrine, but other officials said the bomber was targeting a nearby open-air market. It was not immediately clear which of the two accounts were accurate. No one immediately took credit for the bombing, but Islamic State has claimed responsibility for similar attacks in the past that have targeted Shiite pilgrims near Baghdad. This is VOA News. Some 30 airstrikes by Syrian government warplanes and helicopter gunships hit rebel-held areas of the northern city of Aleppo Saturday, killing at least 5 people. According to the Britain-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, nearly 250 civilians have died in shelling, rocket fire, and air raids in the contested city since April 22nd. Among those killed, at least 50 people in a hospital that was hit in an airstrike. This surge of violence comes as the International Committee of the Red Cross warns that the intensification of fighting could bring many people closer to a humanitarian disaster in Aleppo. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry will travel to Geneva Sunday for talks on the Syrian situation. The State Department said in a Saturday release that Kerry will discuss ongoing efforts to reaffirm a cessation of hostilities throughout Syria. The president of Kenya set fire Saturday to 105 tons of elephant ivory and more than a ton of rhino horn, believed to be the largest stockpile ever destroyed, a dramatic statement by the East African country against the trade in ivory and products from endangered species. Uhuru Kenyatta put a flame to the biggest of 11 pyres of ivory tusk and one of rhino horn on a chilly afternoon, saying a time has come when we must take a stand, and the stand is clear. Kenya is making a statement that for us, ivory is worthless unless it is on our elephants, he said.
New generation of poachers armed with new weapons and connected to vast new markets across the world threatens to exterminate them. The proceeds of violence and death are recycled into crime, threatening not just our natural heritage, but also the stability of our states and the safety of our communities.
Kenya will push for the total ban on trade of ivory in the 17th meeting of the Convention on International Trade of Endangered Species to be held in South Africa later this year. The U.S. has recorded its first death related to the mosquito-borne Zika virus infection. The victim is an elderly man from the U.S. territory of Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico has been facing a widespread Zika outbreak for several months now, with more than a dozen patients requiring hospital treatment. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control reported 683 cases of Zika virus between November 1st and April 15th. Zika-related deaths in adults are considered extremely rare. The infections in pregnant women have been linked to a brain defect and fetal deaths that have become an international public health concern.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
Major milestone which entails the unit government. I think it is everybody's relief that we now see what has gone on for more than almost 2 years.
The African Union welcomes the formation of a transitional government of national unity in South Sudan.
The Electoral Commission has turned around to say that they don't want to do validation. We are definitely not happy. Irrespective of that, we are preparing. We are working hard.
The Ghanaian main opposition party expresses doubt the Electoral Commission will be fair in organizing the November 7th general election.
What happened yesterday is not a surprise. Now, very clear, the dictator in Uganda is using the army, is using the police, is using the judiciary.
And the Ugandan Constitutional Court bans activities of the main opposition party Forum for Democratic Change, or FDC. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. African Union has welcomed the formation of a new transitional government of national unity in South Sudan, calling it a positive step toward peace in the nation. The formation of the transitional administration is part of the peace accord signed last year between President Salva Kiir and former rebel leader Dr. Riek Machar to end the South Sudanese conflict. Erastus Mwencha, deputy chairman of the AU Commission, told me high-ranking officials of the continental body are currently in Juba to help the newly formed government.
For us, it is a big relief that this has happened. As you know, the IGAD brokered peace agreement provided for unit government, and the fact that now we have reached a major milestone which entails the unit government, I think it is everybody's relief that we now see what has gone on for more than almost 2 years is behind us, and that we can now concentrate on, institution and the nation building, but also looking at humanitarian assistance, because, as you know, there are a number of people who are in camps and we need support, we need assistance, emergency assistance as well. So this, I think this is quite in order, and for our part, this is something that has happened with a great relief.
Ahead, now that the government has been formed, ministers have been sworn in, how is the AU going to help the process moving forward?
Yes, we have two of our elder statespersons who are based in Cuba, as you know, former President Festus Mohamed, and also former President Alpha Conaré, are in constant touch with the government and the people of South Sudan. And of course, part of their terms of reference is to continue to accompany the government to implement the peace accord.
Part of the process of this unity government is to end the conflict. However, some people are expressing concern about some skirmishes of instability that they express concern about. How confident are you that this new government will be able to ease those tensions and fear that some South Sudanese have expressed so far?
The confidence can only come from the leadership. And of course, our part is to accompany them, to encourage them. And looking at where the country has come from, the challenges that the country faces, our appeal has been that no one is going to win this conflict through war. And in any case, you can fight, but eventually you still end up on the table. So the sooner this can happen, the better it is for the people of South Sudan, because already the people of South Sudan have gone through a lot of suffering. So it is really in the interest, and of course, the people are tired because, you know, that South Sudan has been in this kind of conflict for decades and decades, leave alone the latest episode, which of course, is quite different from the previous one. But all the same, the people have never known peace. And that's why one would just hope that this time around, all the protagonists can sit down and agree and move forward and start nation building.
The African Union commissioned an inquiry that wrote a report about atrocities committed and the need to hold people accountable for the acts they committed against unarmed civilians. What's next?
Well, as you know, that the report has been made public, and the next step was to form a hybrid court in accordance to what, you know, when the report was given, what was agreed, so that that process can move forward to bring it to logical conclusion or finality.
What will be your message to the people of South Sudan following this formation of the transitional unity government?
First is to appeal that, you know, the road ahead is still not an easy one because, we now need to focus on the key issues, the key elements of institution and nation building. But also to appeal to the international community because the tendency has been that once we reach a stage like this, the rest of the international community walks away. But this is when South Sudan needs the support of the international community to give resources because your people are in refugee camps. There is support needed for institution building. So yes, encouraging, of course, from the national point of view to do their part, but also international community to also give the much needed support.
Erastus Moncha is the deputy chairman of the African Union Commission. He spoke with me from the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa. The acting chairman of the Ghanaian main opposition New Patriotic Party, or NPP, has expressed concern that the chairperson of the Electoral Commission, Charlotte Osei, might not be neutral in overseeing the upcoming November general election. Freddie Blay also told me the opposition party is united in its determination to wrest power from incumbent President John Dramani Mahama and his ruling National Democratic Congress, or NDC, in the upcoming polls.
I'm a team player. I am playing along with our goal-getter, our presidential candidate, Nanadu Dankwa Akufo-Addo. He is the presidential candidate. He's working well. He's campaigning hard, and letting Ghanaians know what is happening in this country, adding his voice to the teeming and the crying voices of Ghanaians against the ineptitude, the corrupt government and incompetent leadership of President Mahama and his NDC party.
Concerns have been raised about internal party conflict. What plans do you have to resolve these issues before the elections?
When you talk about internal conflict, or disagreement and so forth, it's more heat than light. Indeed, we've resolved most of those so-called conflicts that one perceives the party to be bogged down with. Now, let me emphasize that Nana Addo Dankwa Akufo-Addo won with 94% support of the rank and file of the party members. The leading contender, the leading individual who contested Nana Addo, that is Alan Chemati, is working alongside Nana, campaigning with him all over the place. So definitely we've worked on it. Definitely we are more united than what people may think. We are the NDC. We'll go ahead and tell people that there is conflict within the party and so forth. And so within them, of course, there will be conflict as well. They don't have for it. But as I talk to you now, the party is more united than it used to be. we go to meetings and nothing comes out by way of leakage to the media, that is against the party. We are working along with each other. Teamwork.
Mr. Chairman, I wanted to ask you about the party's concerns about the limited ongoing voter registration as the Electoral Commission compiles a list to be used for the election. What is your take on that?
Listen, we have made our position known all along. Since we had the results of the litigation in court, Supreme Court came out to say that President Mahama had won the election. We didn't agree that we accepted it. But of course, the same Supreme Court made some pronouncement. They talked about the bloating of the electoral register. We agreed on that, that there should be the validation. The Electoral Commission has turned around to say that they don't want to do validation. We are definitely not happy. Irrespective of that, we are preparing. We are working hard. We are putting our foot soldiers ready, going around as we talk to you now. Limited registration is going on. We're working hard and seeing to it that nothing untoward can further visited on the register. But be it as it may, definitely we are not happy with the register for which we are going to go to 2016 November 7th. Elections. Definitely not happy.
How confident are you that the Electoral Commission will organize free, fair, credible, and transparent election come November 7?
We have our reservation, of course. A few things have happened that we've pointed out. For example, the Electoral Commission went ahead to set up a committee referring to it as a steering committee. Incidentally, it came out to be that those members who have been appointed onto that steering committee are mainly people from the NDC stock. Of course, it will be alarmed. As we talk now, the Electoral Commission itself has passed its own two PRs. And in their stead, they've even brought people who were working and indeed before the appointments are working while we're working with the president's office. It means, therefore, that the Electoral Commission is only interested in giving appointment or giving responsibilities with regards to the conduct of the election to NDC people. We are not happy. Since the Electoral Commission conduct will not, and let me emphasize, will not inure to people having absolute confidence in the result of what they produce.
Freddie Blair is the acting chairman of the Ghanaian main opposition New Patriotic Party, or NPP. He spoke with me from the capital, Accra. The Ugandan Constitutional Court has banned all activities of the main opposition Forum for Democratic Change party related to the group's defiance campaign. Deputy Chief Justice Stephen Kavuma issued an interim four-week injunction Friday, stopping the party's activities, including their weekly prayers, all forms of demonstrations, radio shows, and press conferences. Ingrid Turinawe is the chairperson of the FDC's Women's League. My colleague Douglas Impuga reached her in the capital Kampala by phone for a reaction to the court order.
What happened yesterday is not a surprise. Now, very clear, the dictator in Uganda is using the army, is using the police, is using the judiciary, every institution of government to make sure that they keep him in power, they give him a leeway of torturing the Ugandans and denying the opposition space to express ourselves. Yesterday, a whole deputy chief justice of Uganda put an injunction on all the activities of FDC. The whole world is well aware that we won election, but we were not declared. The Electoral Commission was used to declare the loser, and the winner was not declared the winner. After that, the Supreme Court was also used to give a judgment that elections were free and fair. For us, we did not even go to court because we knew the outcome would be like that. So we started our defiance campaign. We started the prayers. We started the non-violent actions to express ourselves. We were organizing a demonstration which was supposed to be on 5th. Now we are not allowed to hold prayers. We are not allowed to have a demonstration, which is our constitutional right. But we will continue to defy because we want everybody to know that defiance is defiance. We must defy every unfair judgment, every unfair ruling, every unfair law that will be made in Uganda. We will have to defy it until we free Ugandans.
By the Constitutional Court banning your activities, isn't this the same as banning the party itself?
Yes, of course, because a party which is not functioning, can it be a party? And I think it's the first step towards banning the party itself. Because if we cannot give them access to our headquarters, right now they are saying we cannot have a press conference. That means the party is going to be surrounded, the headquarters will be surrounded, and we will not be able to access it. Like what happened immediately after the election, you know how the headquarters were put under siege. So what is happening in Uganda is very sad, but we will stand strong to reject it and oppose it until we win.
So now, in that case, what happens to your planned activities for next week? Will they go ahead despite the court's ruling?
Yes, of course, as I told you, that defiance is defiance, and I cannot give it any other definition. So we will defy even the court's ruling, because even the court ruling was read without our knowledge. We did not even know that there was a case in the court. It was just a ruling that we had being announced on media. We were not served. We were not in court. We had no lawyer in court. So that's how Museveni does his thing. But we will have to defy all our activities, all our planned activities will go on, and we wait to see what will happen.
Ingrid Turinawe is the chairperson for the Ugandan Main Opposition Forum for Democratic Change, Women's League. She spoke with my colleague Douglas Impuga from Kampala. South Africa's Justice Project, a non-profit monitoring traffic law, says more than 20,000 people are killed in road crashes in the country every year. It maintains that the authorities have lost control of the roads, mainly because they are failing to implement laws designed to save lives. In the second part of a series investigating the situation on South African roads, Darren Taylor reports for VOA on some of the causes of the fatalities.
Vehicles flash past a homeless man begging at a busy intersection in Johannesburg. The sun has burned gold streaks into his stringy brown hair. Donovan Hermans lives here, in the smog under the trees at the side of Empire Road, warmed by filthy blankets. He's often the first person on the scene of the many crashes that happen here.
I've seen a hell of a lot of accidents here. I've seen bikes come down, bikers, I've seen cars trying to make turns, get wiped out by buses or taxis, a hell of a lot of taxi accidents here.
Hermans recently saw a woman killed trying to cross the road.
And she's walking on the island and her phone rings. She takes it out of her pocket, answers her phone, takes one step into the street, bus hits her. But it hits her in the face, smashes her face completely.
Mike 92, control.
Send for Mike 92.
Thank you, Mike 92. Could you please proceed to the November 1 south before Malibongwe for a motor vehicle accident?
Just 10-6.
Paramedic Victor Furendake receives a dispatcher's radio call. He says two words summarize what he's seen in 8 years on the roads.
Disorganization and chaos. People always ask us in public, what's the worst thing that you've ever seen?
Cars speed on a freeway ringing Johannesburg. Many are going much faster than the 100-kilometer-an-hour speed limit. Furendake says the country's highways are hell.
Children that have been killed in incidents, motorists that have been ejected from their cars, those types of things.
South Africa's Justice Project, a non-profit, monitors the country's traffic system. Chairman Howard Dembowski says the deaths and injuries because of road smashes are a national tragedy.
More people are dying on our roads then die in the Middle East in war-torn countries per day.
The government says about 14,000 people are killed in car crashes in South Africa every year. But independent analysts like Caro Smit of the South Africans Against Drunk Driving Group dispute this number.
If you're looking at the statistics from the mortuary, it's more likely 20,000 or 25,000 a year.
A man lies in bed in hospital, body twisted and torn in a head-on collision. Dembowski, a former policeman, says South Africa's official annual road death toll is too low for a good reason. Its Department of Transport only records immediate fatalities. It's failing to register the deaths of people from injuries up to 30 days after a traffic accident, even after it pledged to do so in 2010 when it signed the United Nations Decade of Action for Road Safety Declaration. Dembowski says weak statistics mean South Africa cannot successfully strategize to confront the crisis on its roads. Transport Department spokespeople did not respond to repeated requests for comment on the contents of this report and about road safety in general in South Africa. Dembowski says so many people are killed on the roads because the nation's very good traffic laws are not being adequately enforced.
Law-wise, South Africa is right up there with the rest of the world. Enforcement-wise, South Africa is right down there with Kenya, with Nigeria.
The World Health Organization agrees. It says laws against offenses like drunk driving and speeding are poorly enforced in South Africa. Dembowski says recent arrests of high-profile citizens for alleged traffic crimes, including driving under the influence of alcohol, offer more evidence of the growing havoc on the roads.
When you have senior members of government, senior members of law enforcement agencies disregarding the law and blatantly showing people that they have no respect for the law, how exactly do you expect ordinary Joe Soap and Mary Soap out there to have respect for the law?
Dembowski maintains the authorities currently have little control over motorists and their dangerous driving.
If we don't get a grip of it soon, South Africa stands a very good chance of doubling its road fatalities and injuries by the time we reach 2020, instead of...
According to Justice Project research, there are now 11 million licensed drivers in South Africa. Last year, authorities issued driving permits to a further 500,000 people. At this rate, says Dembowski, the country's roads are soon going to be ultra-congested and much more hazardous. I'm Darren Taylor for VOA News in Johannesburg.
Next on Let's Talk. Flight attendants. Can one be too old to do the job? Join host Sandy Shomari and his guests discussing flight attendants, age and duties. This lighthearted show covers topics of your interest. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa. Next time on Straight Talk Africa. We'll discuss Burundi's violence and security. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. And right now it's time for music from our African collection. Enjoy what we have for you today.
Dance, dance, baby, shake, shake, yeah. Hallelujah, Hosanna, girl, you I want to. Give your body banana sweet in my heart. When you dance, you're the better one. Give my love is forever. Want to sing you the makosa, oh, yeah. Where your mama do? Where your papa do? Where your sister do? Where your brother do? Come with the music, oh. I come with the video, yeah. Baby, that's it, I say you do my music video. I say if not all I'm all, I'm can't change it, yeah. Can't change it. Mathematics, I can't solve it, yeah. Can't solve it. Snap, I cannot shoot it, yeah. Body, and you can dance it too.
I love you, baby. I love you today.
Make me happy, yo. Don't you make me happy, yo.
and I feel like a celebrity, yo. The way that you rock in your body, yo. You know, say my babies are pretty fine, yeah. You know, say we just wanna have some fun, yeah. Cause tonight you would have make me happy, yeah. And I'm willing to spend all my life with you, baby. For better, for worse, yo. I go buy your comfort, yo. Carry you to my demons, yo. I give it to you, baby. So I say, make it just follow me. Yo, kiddy, yo, follow me, follow me. Yo, kiddy, yo, melody, melody. Yo, kiddy, yo, harmony, harmony, yo, baby, yo. Don't leave it to make me happy, yo.
Yeah.
Shaba. Me love no be Shaba. We bang just in a car. You say make a way, girl, I go wait. So whenever you are ready, just let me know, no. You say make a way for your love, I go wait. Oh, girl. So when you're ready, just let me know, no. Ooh, what a wine, you got it, baby. What I get bang for your love. And I feel to bang for your love. The kind of love me get for you, no be joke. Can you don't carry me go? Anywhere you enter, can you scatter? You make a man spray you in dollar. Every day I won't see that your face. You say make a wait, girl, I will wait. So whenever you are ready, just let me know, no. You say make a wait for your love, I will wait. Oh, girl. So when you're ready, just let me know, no. Ooh, what a wine, guy, baby.
Sexy like my on the floor. Oh yeah, shaggy zip up. When I see you, oh boy, I confuse so. Confuse. I say, wait till you ask, I don't go refuse. I don't go refuse. And I go take it for you whenever you're down. I say for you, them girls that go bound. We can go get a story all over the town. Your papa, they beg, I go build down a house.
You say, make a wait. Girl, I go wait. You are ready, just let me know, no. You say make a wait for your love, I go wait. Oh, girl. So when you're ready, just let me know, no. Ooh, what a wine, guy, baby. Girl, I go wait.
Girl, I go wait. Oh.
So whenever you are ready, just let me know, no.
Yeah.
You say make a wait for your love, I go wait.
Girl, I go wait.
Oh. So when you're ready, just let me know, no.
Yeah.
Rain on the mix. Rain on the mix. I'm gonna make you mine.
Music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sally, reporter Douglas Impuga, producer Odette Frazier, and our engineer for today, Xiaogang Chang. We say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, on a dead tree, there are no monkeys. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
South Sudan's rebel leader Riek Machar returned to the capital Juba on Tuesday, April 26th, to be sworn in as vice president in an effort to end the civil war that has killed tens of thousands of people and forced more than 2 million from their homes. "I'm happy to be back," Machar told reporters at the airport. "The war was vicious. We have lost a lot of people in it, and we need to bring our people together so that they can unite, reconcile, heal the wounds, the mental wounds that they have. Peace is the only choice for us to relieve our people from the undeserved suffering associated with armed conflict enforced upon them," said South Sudan's President Salva Kiir following the ceremony. "I believe this is the only way to return South Sudan to the path of peace, stability, and prosperity." The conflict erupted in December 2013 after a power struggle between Kiir and Machar, his former deputy. The peace agreement, signed in August 2015, calls for a 30-month transitional period during which the transitional government of national unity, comprised of representatives from the government, the opposition, the former detainees, and other political parties, will preside, leading to elections in 2018. "This is clearly an important step for South Sudan," said U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Samantha Power. "After months of delay and obstructionism, both sides compromised to make this happen. It's the best hope that South Sudan has had in a very long time." U.S. State Department spokesman Mark Toner said, "It is important now for South Sudan's leaders to take additional steps, form the transitional government of national unity, to make progress on the core agenda of the peace agreement, according to the timeline that was established by the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission." The United States will continue to press South Sudan's leaders to take those steps for the good of their country and its people.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.